In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne on a Friday. And we shared with you guys earlier in the show, Brandon Ayuk getting his contract with the San Francisco 49ers. It was pretty anticlimactic for me. Like, I was waiting to see how this thing was going to unfold. I was certain that at this point, let me make it clear, I would have paid Brandon Ayuk. And if I was Brandon Ayuk, I would have just taken the money. None of it would have turned out this way if I were either in charge or actually Brandon Ayuk and not Brandon Scott myself. But since it was playing out the way it was, I anticipated that he was going to get traded. He didn't. He ends up signing the contract anyway. All is well and forgiven, apparently. And they're going to go on about their way. But it did get me to thinking about, hey, man, a time that you were waiting on something, and by the end of it, it did not feel like it was worth the wait.
It was anticlimactic. It was
very
right,
much so.
Yeah, with Brandon Ayuk, it ends up being 4 years, $120 million. So it wasn't up at Justin Jefferson level or anything like that. And it was like, oh, okay, wait, all this drama for this? Okay.
Yeah. What are we doing?
I guess. All right. What the hell? It was like, well, how does all that drama yield this? I know everybody. $120 million is a lot of money. So that's what expectations are so great that $120 million can somehow seem anticlimactic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And it's not like, I mean, if that's the point or the response you want to have about, oh, yeah, well, he's clearly waiting on $120 million, I don't think anybody thought that he wasn't going to get a whole lot of money. You know,
right.
like maybe it was going to be 115, or maybe he should have held out for 130. But what are we talking about here? Like, the dude was going to get somewhere upwards of $100 million literally as long as, like, his legs didn't fall off or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know the scenario that would have had to happen. Or, like, if he killed somebody, like, something drastic would have had to happen for him not to get this money. He was going to get paid eventually. I just thought it was going to be by a different team or I didn't think this by yesterday because of the way the 49ers were talking, but he holds the 49ers over a barrel and gets even more money. None of that really happened. He got the deal roundabout what it seemed like he was going to
get. He got a couple million dollars more than what the initial offers were by reports, basically. The initial was $28 or $27 million, so a couple, $2 or $3 million more per year. I think it's a relatable experience to a lot of people that you just, whatever it is in your life that you're building up that lets you down. What's your most recent example?
So my most recent example is this documentary that Netflix produced on the Steve McNair. I guess you could say the life and death of Steve McNair is what it turned out to be, because it was a lot of, and it makes sense to do this. He was a incredible sports figure in his time. But it was a lot of rehashing and going over what Steve McNair was as a player and kind of building it up from Alcorn State, where he was like a folk hero. Like, he was one of those stories that people would travel around to go see, you know, especially for a smaller school in HBCU. And then, of course, being the highest drafted black quarterback in NFL history at the time, and Houston doing that, that really resonated with me and kind of reminded me why I connected with Steve McNair so as much as I did, and I was a kid at the time. But like, it was a lot of that, and then also a lot of rehashing of a case that's already kind of been covered in different places. And so if you're inclined to like be interested about this, most of the information that they presented was very much so already out there. Like,
I, and
I'm not a documentary filmmaker, but I feel pretty confident in telling you that with the information I already had, that I could have produced this documentary. Like,
You know what?
Whoever got paid for it, I could have made that buck for sure.
You know what? You know where we've run into that with in Houston sports as well as with a lot of the Astros stuff. Like in rehashing, there have been some long form articles or documentaries that rehash the being better than everybody else scandal. And you spend basically the whole time watching. You're like, I know.
Get to the new part, right?
There's more than that. Like, you're not even telling the good part. What are you doing? Yeah, it's tough. It's probably like when a lawyer or a cop watches a movie about lawyers or cops. You're like, that's kind of right, but not 100% right. And you become more of you're analyzing whether or not they got the story right or whether they're getting to the juicy stuff that you don't know. And more so than anything else. Yeah, that can be disappointing. You're not the first person I've heard say that.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt, in a lot of ways, it felt like, oh, this is just like a recap of Steve McNair's career.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I haven't bothered watching it.
Which I did enjoy the recap of his career. That just wasn't really what I was expecting to get out of the documentary. And maybe it's my fault for setting the expectation, but I had not long ago listened to a podcast that Sports Illustrated did on this very topic. It was called Fall of a Titan. And man, they get into everything about this case. The podcast itself makes you, by the end of it, really question whether the public record and what's said to have happened to Steve McNair and what's said to have happened the night he died or the morning he died, however you want to look at it, if any of it is actually true or the case. And then at the very least, if the police involved, not only did they not do a good investigation, but they even ask all of the relevant questions that you would think would be related to this whole ordeal. You know, like, there were questions they didn't even ask.
Yeah, I would never expect that the Nashville Police Department, when it came to the scandalous death of a very notable local figure, would ever not do things by the book. Okay, it happened in Nashville, right?
It did happen in Nashville, yeah. But Seth, you would expect a cop to want to at least think, who would want to if you find two people dead?
Yeah,
before you definitively say that one of them killed the other and then themselves, you would at least want to go down the rabbit hole of, okay, I've got two people here dead with gunshot wounds. Who would want to kill either one of or both of them?
Right. Well, like, that's where,
is that not a basic question to ask?
Yeah, well, and that's I don't know, sometimes there with I feel like sometimes when your conspiratorial brain gets working, it's, you got to ask, like, all right, well, yeah, how much were the cops even allowed to do in a situation like this?
Yeah.
Versus whether there's orders coming from somewhere else when it comes to a very notable local celebrity.
Yeah.
There's a documentary out about Son of Sam right now. There's so much about that case that met my expectations and more, because that's one of those famous cases. Kids, he was a serial killer, or at least he was classified as a serial killer in New York City in the 1980s. There was a lot about that case that I didn't know about and I didn't understand the significance of. It goes back into like the fear of cults at that time, where there was like a mass hysteria over cult. That one was really good. I think it's still on Netflix. But it's about the Son of Sam. With McNair, I wish he had not exceeded my expectations at times. As somebody who played against him, many, many times, who was in he was in my division the entire time I played in the NFL. I wish he had not met my expectations. From the old AFC Central to the new AFC South. Would you please just stop every now and then? Would you stop? Okay, I know you. I know you thought of this because you're watching a McNair documentary, and I show up in one of the plays.
You're in the doc. Right? You're in the doc. That I would say this about the documentary.
Yeah.
The thing that I like best about it, there are two things. I like that I got to go back and kind of romanticize my childhood, which coincides with Steve McNair being drafted by the Houston Oilers. I did actually like that. It's just not what I went into it for, but I did like that. Okay. I also liked. And I hate to say this because this is not a glamorous moment for you and in your career because I know you guys are trying to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I also liked watching you or watching this documentary and being like, you know what? I think I know one of the guys that's pushing along the goal line in this decisive play to go to the Super Bowl in this AFC championship game, which, of course, in 1999, you guys played, or that was the 1999 season, right?
99, that was the only team we lost to. The Titans were the only team we lost to all year long. In the we ended up 14-3, including the postseason, and the three losses were all to the Titans, yeah.
The play, obviously, as you remember, did not work out for you, Seth. It did not work out for your team. But I will say, for your credit, you did win your rep. You did win your rep. You just were not on the play side. The play went away from you. The only way you could have made an impact on the play is if you could have duplicated yourself somehow. And since you can't be more than one person, there was nothing that you could do. So yeah,
right. Yeah. Was that a run to his left, to McNair's left?
A run to McNair. You were to his left, so it was a run to the right, I believe, if I remember the play correctly. Okay.
It's hard to remember all the Steve McNair touchdown runs when this is a Texans one when I was with the Texans and with Gary Walker, awesome defensive tackle on the other side of me, that, like, this was the classic Steve McNair moment for me. Gary Walker and I both had really good, we both had really good pass rushes. We both came completely clean. And we both hit Steve McNair from opposite sides simultaneously. And I should go back and find this play sometime. We both, Gary and I, bounced off of Steve McNair. It was like, and McNair never budged. It was like those clacking balls on the thing that desktop clacking balls little thing, where if you time it up right and you let the pendulums go on both sides, the balls just clack back out. Gary and I were the clacking metal balls on that. It was humiliating. It was humiliating, except for the fact that it was Steve McNair and he did those things kind of regularly.
Yeah, so he was just, and I did get to get this sense from both that podcast that I mentioned earlier and the doc, but he just was country strong.
Because
he did not seem like from his physique or anything about him, didn't seem like, man, he's in the gym and he's just really making it happen. Like he's Tim Tebow in the gym or something like that. You didn't get that sense.
No, it was more so
just like, yo, he's just kind of a physical freak and gifted and like country, Mississippi country strong.
He's one of those guys with a lot of quarterbacks. You can't appreciate how big they are until you meet them in person. You know, Schaub is like that. When people meet Schaub in person for the first time, they're kind of blown away by how big a dude he is.
Yeah.
Because he's tall and he's got a bigger frame. A lot of quarterbacks, like if they wanted to, probably could have bulked up and played offensive line. Like that's how big they are. Their frames are just really, really big. And McNair, yeah, to an extreme degree. And then he was as athletic as a running back. And he had a hell of an arm. He's probably one of the sadder stories, not just in his life, but in terms of his career, of could have possibly been one of the truly great ones with just slightly different circumstances.
Yeah.
And it was a pain in the ass going against him. I'd say in general, the things that, this is one of the benefits of, we talk about being disappointed by things. This is one of the things that can go one of two ways. As a young professional athlete where all of a sudden a bunch of money is plopped down into your lap, it's that I recognize I wish it had taken fewer years than it did, but I definitely, over the course of several years as a young player, you realize that, oh, wow, a lot of this dream stuff that's been driven into my head by consumerism and everything else as being like the pinnacle of life and success, it's not all that. It's not all it's cracked up to be. So, like, the best thing for me was when I was young enough that I had way more money than any 25-year-old should ever have. I was able to start going on vacations with my future wife and with my wife, same woman, by the way. I still had the sticker shock of like, wait a second, a cruise costs how much? And I'm like, well, I guess this is what people do. And we went on a cruise and we were kind of like, I mean, it's nice, but it's just, I guess it's not really for us. And you feel kind of weird about it. So you try it a couple times. Like, I don't know. Is this a me problem or, you know, living in a big house? I was always kind of like, this is kind of a pain in the ass. I don't know if this is all that I thought it was going to be. And you have enough experiences like that. I think maybe earlier than most people get to learn this lesson, you realize that, oh, okay, it really is true. All the platitudes are true that, like, yeah, money can't buy happiness or money isn't always what it seems. Like, you learn that lesson. And some guys don't. Some just keep trying to fill up whatever void they have in their life. And then there are some people who genuinely enjoy that type of stuff. So they're like, okay, they're in heaven. I'm just not a big, it turns out I wasn't as materialistic as I thought I was.
Yeah.
So like I got to learn that lesson that, man, we were on vacation. We went to this little place called Little Palm Island in the Keys. And it's just like a dream paradise. And you're off and basically 3 days into the vacation, I learned, okay, yeah. It is really awesome if I'm drinking a lot. They got license. They got nice drinks, and I can be waited on and everything. But I can do this in Galveston. So it was ultimately a good thing that I was disappointed by it. But it was in the moment kind of it did make me realize something about myself that, like, all right, whatever I'm searching for, it's more on the inside. I'm not going to get it with this material stuff. And that's when I started to learn to look more inside. We both started to look more inside ourselves. And I can say, because I've seen both sides of the stick growing up and then young, that it really is, like, again, going back to cliches, like the simplest things in, the best things in life are free. Like,
yes.
Taking a walk in the woods, like, all right. Oh, good. I've got the money to afford I can afford a sleeping pad when I go camping. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I genuinely started really, really enjoying the really simple stuff because I was so disappointed by some of the more materialistic stuff.
Yeah.
And also I hate parties. So there's never been a part of me that was like, I had to be at this party in Vegas or something. Like, nah, I'm not going to enjoy that. I don't need to be paying money for something like that.
Yeah, you mentioned moving into a new house or a big house.
Yeah.
I've got one. We'll do this later on in the show because I've got one that's fairly recent there, too, about, hey, moving into the nicest house that you've ever lived in, the most expensive place that you've ever lived in, the nicest neighborhood that you've ever lived in, and then you get there and you're like, huh. I think I want to go back to where I was. I've got that exact story. We'll do that a little bit later. Also, coming up next.
Hey, are you safe and is there food in your belly? That level of Maslow's pyramid or whatever. Like, that's pretty much, that's a lot of it, man. You get those two things, you can have a lot of other really cool stuff.
100%. He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott, in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, the most impactful Texans newcomer. We'll talk about that on Payne and Pendergast.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From on the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne on a Friday. And Seth, you made a point earlier in the show. We were talking about Nick Caserio. We were going over that athletic survey, or the survey from The Athletic, with a handful of agents from around the league, talking about Nick Caserio and the state of the team, where they are now, and all these kind of things. And you did mention that for as active of an offseason that they had, three of their big moves, and I would argue their three biggest acquisitions this offseason, in whatever order you want to make it, Daniil Hunter, Stephon Diggs, Joe Mixon, two of those acquisitions were via trade. Only one of them was actually a free agent acquisition. Now, they did end up restructuring the contracts of both guys that they traded for, being Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon. But the way they got those guys was actually by trade as opposed to free agency. I hadn't really thought much about that, but it is the case. It does have me thinking about the impact of the newcomers, though, because I think you can go in a bunch of different directions on this. I feel like Stephon Diggs might be a very obvious answer because he's clearly the most famous of the guys that they brought in, of the Texans newcomers. But I want to throw this out to you, and I want to get it from the audience as well. 713-572-4610 is the text line. You can also interact with us on YouTube, Sports Radio 610, and on Twitch as well. Who do you think is going to be the most impactful Texans newcomer this season? And it could be a rookie or a vet, but who do you think is the most impactful Texans newcomer this season?
Oh, it's a really good question because, you know, you could slice it up a bunch of different ways. I think that, for one, I think Daniil Hunter is going to make an impact. But I also don't want to discount that Jonathan Greenard had turned into a really good pass rusher by the end of the year last year.
Yeah.
Just watching some of those late season games, especially the, you know, he was getting to the quarterback clean and quick at times. So I don't want to act like Daniil Hunter is not a huge addition, and he isn't an improvement over Jonathan Greenard, but I don't think he's going to make as much of an impact. And I think Stephon Diggs might be part of like a very, very scary passing attack. I think when it comes to overall impact on his side of the ball, for me, it's Azeez Alshire. Because I think Azeez Alshire, without being an all-pro himself or anything like that, no matter how well he plays individually, I do think that he's going to tie everything together and have the defense operating on a different level mentally than they were last year. I think he can be the biggest boost to his side of the ball in terms of making them a legitimately credible threat. Whereas I think the offense was going to be a threat whether or not Stephon Diggs was added to it. I think Azeez Alshire, without being as good a player relative to his position as Stephon Diggs is, can have a bigger overall impact on the defense.
Yeah, so this is interesting because it depends on how you look at it or how you want to measure impact. Because I think where I'd agree with Azeez Alshire is I think he might end up being their biggest upgrade. Like, I think he's going to end up being the biggest upgrade in position as opposed to, or in terms of, who was your middle linebacker before and who's your middle linebacker now, and specifically how it fits the ethos of the team. So I think there's a credible case for Azeez Al-Shaair being their biggest upgrade. I still, though, feel like their most impactful player in terms of newcomers is going to be Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, in limited sample size so far, limited action in the preseason, and what we're able to see from him in training camp and at practices, really also just looking at the guy, like, he is an intimidating dude, and it translates to his play, like, on the field. There's, like, he's physically imposing, but he's also really good with his technique. He's worked with Will Anderson with his hands and being more combative in that way. You know, being like just smarter with his technique and everything. Like, I think that Danielle Hunter is a much more complete player and much higher level player than maybe we are giving him credit for.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just because the offense is going to be so good. You've got a franchise quarterback, and then you added Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon to the mix. And so we're so fixated on that. Y'all have heard us talking about Bobby Slowick all day. Like, there are reasons to be obsessed with the offense and to kind of look at Danielle Hunter and his nearly $50 million guaranteed that the Texans just signed into him and be like, oh, yeah, that's cool and all. But I think he is going to be extremely impactful for this team this year.
You know, I think the other part of that, though, too, and I guess maybe where I don't – and again, I'm not trying to not give Danielle Hunter credit for being a huge addition. It's that they did a really good job of bringing multiple guys like Danielle Hunter in. Like, Danico Autry and Jerry Hughes – and Jerry Hughes was already here, but they signed him late, right before training camp, so I kind of almost look at him as like an addition. Both those guys are guys that have also – they're not as good a player as Danielle Hunter, but they've made it as long as they have and were as good as they've become or were in their careers by also being really good at the technical stuff. That's where I get excited. When I was out there the first couple days of camp – and I'm looking at Danico Autry, Danielle Hunter, and Jerry Hughes, and at various times talking to Will Anderson, I'm like, man, this guy, it's like he picked the right cabinet, you know? It's almost like a president. You want to be sure that they've got a really good cabinet of advisors, because that's who the guys with the actual expertise. Any given president, the cabinet members ideally are the people who are actually experts in things, and the president can tie it all together, and he's only as good as his resources. It's like that's. I feel like he's got a really good cabinet. I feel like his advisors and everybody else in bringing him along. It's a group of elders that are you don't see a lot of. Like, he's got some really good influences around him, and it's not like Will needed guys to come in and tell him how to straighten up and fly right. You know,
right?
That's a rough spot to be in when you got a young pass rusher who's also kind of a jackass, and you need an older guy. You need older guys on the team to like teach him how to go to bed at night. And hey, don't. Don't get in trouble. Like, those kinds of things, that's a headache to have. Will Anderson, you don't have to worry about any of that.
He's the opposite, Seth.
He's the opposite.
I mean, D'Amico Ryans himself has noted, like, when guys come into the building, when people join this team, you want to know the Texan way. You want to know the standard. You want to know what we expect from you, how we want you to comport yourself. Just follow around Will Anderson. He is the living and breathing example of what the Texans want to be about these days.
Yeah, that's and I guess the good again, this is rich people problems where you've got a wealth of additions to the team where it's hard to figure out exactly, okay, who's going to have the biggest impact.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's hard to figure out. Hopefully it's something that you just actually have a hard time deciding because they made really big improvements in all these ways. It's also, I think sometimes with football and free agency, it's very, very dicey. It's not as predictable as in baseball, where baseball, for the most part, with some glaring exceptions here and there, Jose Abreu, you're gonna get a guy's production and what he's done in the past, and maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, but you can reasonably rely that guy's gonna be the same player when you pick him up, and the scheme doesn't matter and all of that as much as it does in football. With the way that they brought the specific free agents and I'll include Diggs and Mixon in that. It's basically like free agency, their trades. But Diggs is the only one where I've really at any point thought, yeah, but is it a scheme fit or does it actually do as much as you're paying for? And it's just for all the old classic and cliche reasons we've been talking about all offseason long. But they're justifiable talking points. You know, I think he's just the one that there's the most question marks about. And I'm personally not worried about it, but I understand that it's a possibility that any of those various issues that might crop up with Diggs. Yeah, sure. That's a possibility. I don't worry about it with any of the other guys.
Yeah, the 281, and we might have been making this point around the same time, but this is echoing what I was saying about Azeez Al-Shaair. Azeez is the biggest upgrade over what he was replacing. Also from the 281, I think the most impactful will be Danielle Hunter. Here's one that I want to ask you about real quick before we get out of here, Seth. From the 832, they mentioned DeNico Autry. If he's not suspended the first six games of the season, he's pretty high on this list. He's got to be, right? I mean, both the vacuum or the hole that they've got at defensive tackle or at least the role he was going to fill on passing downs for sure, and just his versatility and the fact that they gave him $20 million over 2 years, $10 million guaranteed, that to me tells me that you value a guy, especially at that age. I feel like if he's not missing the first six games, he's higher on this list than I have him, or he's on the list at all, because I guess I don't have him on there because he's not playing the first six games. And by the time he comes back, he'll be really high on the list because he'll be a new addition of his own right? Like the new addition of DeNico Autry.
It's a shot in the arm, maybe, and especially at that point in the season, you've got some injuries here or there. It's going to happen. So it's adding the troops to the mix at a really advantageous time. I think that, I think the fact that DeNico Autry and Danielle Hunter and then when you look at the cast of free agents overall, it's kind of glaring how much differently we felt about the potential of J.J. Watt coming back 5 months ago was compared to now. Or whenever we started, it feels like it was pre-free agency that we started, you know, to kind of throwing it out there because J.J. had put some things out there that we were wondering about, like, oh, wow, J.J. really might come back into the mix? It somewhere along the way, it kind of became like, oh, that's interesting, versus, oh, wow, that would be awesome. Now it's a little bit of like, oh, yeah, that would be an interesting tweak, wouldn't it? It's a strange course of events, this offseason saga of wondering about JJ's coming back or not.
Oh, yeah. No, if you can believe, though. I mean, it's died down, obviously, but you can believe if that actually comes up again, we will refan the flames and reignite that energy. Of course, I was there at J.J. Watt's charity softball event where he actually spoke to him about it and got him to address it. I think that's when it really got to its highest. And remember, Danielle Hunter and Stephon Diggs were there. So that was after free agency, right? They'd already brought in those guys. They were participants in that event. And then you get J.J. there with these new guys, these new, marquee players, and Stephon Diggs and Danielle Hunter, and, of course, Will Anderson Jr. is there as well. And you're like, oh, man, could J.J. play with these cats? You know, pretty exciting.
One of our texters makes a good point. He says, well, it's like Anderson did undergrad at Alabama and grad school with the Texans defensive line. But it's even more than that, because at Alabama, he wasn't a pure just edge pass rusher.
Right.
He was a linebacker turned into almost like a 3-4 defensive end in a lot of respects. He's playing head up on the offensive tackle. So he was never just a pure hand in the dirt lining up on the outside pass rusher. So it's almost like he's one of those guys that was, he's like going back to grad school for a different than his undergraduate major.
Yeah.
It's a brand new world in a lot of ways. So having all of those older guys there to really help him make that transition is that much more beneficial.
He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott, filling in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, we will circle back to the Astros. How comfortable are you with this pitching staff after what you've seen as of late? That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It is Payne and Pendergast. Brandon Scott filling in for Sean Pendergast, rolling along here with Seth Payne. And earlier in the show, we did give Joe Espada credit for pushing the right buttons last night in the Astros win. It's back-to-back, by the way, back on the winning track. But I want to spend a couple of moments here focusing on the pitching staff, particularly the starting pitching. We understand that they have dealt with all kinds of health issues with their starting rotation, with their pitching staff. Of course, Justin Verlander was out with a bad neck for months. You know, we had back-to-back. We had starting pitchers have Tommy John surgery on back-to-back days this year. That's happened. But you get to this point in the year, and we're here at the end of August, approaching September here, and this is back-to-back starts with two of your young pitchers, two guys that you hope are, especially based off of how they've pitched recently, a part of your foundation as an organization between Spencer Arrighetti the night before, flirting with the no-hitter, and, oh, by the way, having pitched well in his starts leading up to that for the most part. And then Hunter Brown last night, who I wouldn't say was brilliant, but was pretty damn good. I mean, he pitched well enough to get you the win, goes 6 2/3, giving up just the 2 runs, the 2 walks, had the 4 strikeouts. He's been really good.
Yeah.
I feel good about this pitching staff. How comfortable are you with it as we approach September and get that much closer to the postseason?
I'd feel so much better than I ever thought I could this year, especially when you consider the fact that the two guys you mentioned, Javier and Urquidy, is having the twin UCL surgeries.
Wild.
Right now, I feel way better about Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti, and especially their potential upside, then I think maybe I would have about Javier and Urquidy at this point in the season and how they'll fare, you know, moving on into the postseason. That part of it feels really good. The pitching development has been awesome. Watching Spencer Arrighetti over the course of the last month, where he's had a sub-2.5 ERA in the month of August, and it doesn't feel like an accident. It feels like he's just really come into his own and is finding his stride. And then I guess probably the biggest surprise of it all, really, given the first few weeks of the season, was that the pitching staff as a whole has been as dominant as they've been.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're trying to talk yourself into things early in the season, you realize, okay, well, by the back of the baseball card, this, that, the other, some of these guys will come around. Certainly Hader can't be this bad, all of that. That as a whole, you look on it and you start seeing all of these, like, oh my God, what was their ERA over the last 6 weeks? It's just been their team ERA. That part of it's been really, really good. And then on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of it, aside from your all-star caliber players playing the way they have since they made their comeback, it's really just Espada and the way he's managed the small ball aspect of things. That last night, he used 3 pinch hitters last night. With guys that you never really expected were going to be up in the majors this year. With Dubon, you never know what you're going to get out of Dubon.
Yeah.
But Dubon's been very, very clutch in the last couple games. 2 nights ago in the outfield, and then last night at home at the plate in the 8th inning.
So here's how I knew that I was really confident in this Astros pitching staff. When a couple of weeks ago, when we got the news that Luis Garcia was not going to be returning this year, when we found out that Luis Garcia would not pitch again for the Astros this season, and I looked at it and just kind of shrugged my shoulders and was like, oh, you know what? That sucks. I like Luis Garcia. Luis Garcia could absolutely help this team. It'd be better to have him be a part of the mix. It's not like, especially if you're a team with postseason aspirations, it's not like you can have too many arms. You need as many healthy ones as you can possibly get. So it's not like I didn't want him back, but I didn't feel the pain of that I feel like I would have had Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown not turn things around the way that they have.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we're in a weird spot too, where usually this late in the year, you're either completely looking ahead to the playoffs, or your mindset's a little bit different, or you're just kind of in a zone and you're not thinking too much about it. But I, for whatever reason, I hadn't really been thinking about the pitching playoff rotation that much. I was more thinking about the fact that they're down a reliever right now. You got a six-man rotation. But during Spencer Arrighetti's start, they put up the graphic of the potential playoff rotation, and you're like, oh, yeah, and Arrighetti, yeah, there's a very good chance Arrighetti's not even in your four-man rotation for the playoffs, despite how well he's playing right now. That's where it kind of hit me, that it was even a shock for a moment there, that there was a part of me that was like, what do you mean he's not going to be? Oh, yeah, I forgot about Kikuchi. It's a nice spot to be in. I appreciate this.
Yeah, because I was going to say, Seth, I'm not exactly sure how I feel about it.
Based
on how he's been pitching. And I was the one not that long ago, and it's got to be whatever his last wretched start was, but it wasn't that long ago when I said, you know what, I believe in Spencer Arrighetti's upside, his potential, the idea that he's going to be important to this team eventually. In the long run, someday, one day, that day ain't today, because that day he was getting rocked whenever it was.
Right.
And then ever since then, I feel like he's actually figured it out. It's pure coincidence. It has nothing to do with it. I'm not calling like superstition or a jinx or like I had anything to do with it. But
I would take credit for
it. But it is the line of demarcation, though. I'm like, yo, I went from thinking, hey, this guy needs more time in the minors and he's not going to be ready again until next year, to – you know what? I wouldn't mind having a postseason rotation that's got a couple of young guys and, say, whoever you trust most between Framber Valdez and Yusei Kikuchi and this version of Justin Verlander.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if it's Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown, and you say, all right, Framber, Justin, Yusei, and Ronel, Let's see which one of you guys can join these young bucks, you know? Like, I wouldn't hate that right now.
His worst, it got dicey for him in that White Sox game. He pitched 5 2/3 innings. That was like his diciest performance this month. But you go back to the one where you're really, the cause for concern was when he just completely lost it versus the Tigers. And that was back in June, mid-June.
I think that might be the one.
He went less than two innings in that game.
That was at home, right? That was a home game.
Let me look it up.
Yeah,
here.
No, I'm pretty sure. I remember now. That was at Minute Maid Park. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I think that's it. That was actually the time I was like, man, you know what? This dude here, man, is just not ready. He's got the stuff. He just ain't ready. And then now I feel like I want him pitching postseason baseball if he's going to pitch like this.
I think the thing, too, with, and this is where it's nice having Verlander back. They were talking about it on the broadcast the other day, about Verlander talking to the younger pitchers, where you've got all these guys that are coming up on or are currently pitching more innings than they've ever pitched before, that, you know, Verlander talked to them about how, you know, you can push through whatever that feeling to where, man, it just doesn't, I'm hitting this kind of wall, that you can push through it, you know, like that. I think sometimes having the older guy that's been through it and understands just what it's like when your body's feeling differently than it's ever felt before at that stage in the season, it's really nice to have the older guys on the roster to talk to him about that. But then also, that's where with Arrighetti, you figure, all right, yeah, like he doesn't need to be, he can be a valuable resource in the playoffs, but it doesn't have to be as a starter, or it can be in a piggyback fashion, however you use him. We've got enough experience with this crew of Astros, and these guys haven't come up through the minor league system, that you don't worry about who gets the starts necessarily when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah, speaking of the playoffs too, I do want to point out the Yusei Kikuchi trade. Like that's somebody who I don't know if he's in your rotation per se, or if he is a part of your piggyback situation if you end up doing that, you know, a bullpen game, and maybe he's your opener. I don't know. He factors in somewhere, and the fact that he has worked out the way he has, and not just that, but they've been able to kind of, I feel like the Astros, in addition to Kikuchi himself, deserve credit for trying to, like, remold him, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, like as soon as he gets here, like, you know what, why don't you throw more changeups? And then he throws more changeups, and he looks like a completely different guy. Like, and we know the Astros have the secret sauce when it comes to pitching. They have for a while. But it's incredible to watch in real time, I think. And Yusei Kikuchi is an example of that, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. That's the organization. Look, for all of the issues and the scares, and really what amounts to the biggest glaring thing over this run since 2015, I think, aside from the being better than everybody else scandal, was just that short period of time in which the Astros operated without a general manager. The one thing, the little knock on their hubris, perhaps, that they had to get, maybe ultimately it's good for the long term, was then in ownership realizing, okay, general managers maybe aren't all of that overrated, and that we probably should have one. We should probably always have one in the organization. Whatever happens with Dana Brown over the ensuing years, I trust that they will, they'll try to replace, if maybe he's here for 20 more years, but let's say he isn't, they'll probably try to replace him, and maybe not make drastic moves without the future GM.
I have been mostly positive today.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, when you talk about that little period there where they didn't have a GM, really gets my blood boiling. I hated it at the time, in the moment, and we all had that Astros hubris or Astros arrogance, as Clint Sterner likes to call it, and I didn't buy it. I thought it was ridiculous at the time, proved to be ridiculous based off of what they did, but we're at a better time now, and all is well.
Listen. This is, if you want to see the downside of it, like, the Astros learned their lesson in that regard. Jerry Jones has been doing it for 30 years. Like, when your owner catches a dose of hubris, sometimes it sticks around. And that's what Jerry Jones has been doing for 30 years. He, like, when people ask him, he just did an angry interview the other day where somebody asked him, like, why he felt like he should be the GM, and he brought up all of his past accomplishments. And really, most of them go back to when Jimmy Johnson was actually doing a lot of the stuff that Jerry wants to do now.
Yeah.
It's a bad deal, man. It doesn't always pass. Some guys kind of, so I'll credit Jim Crane for having a little dose of it, and it's a little bit of a reality check, and you learn and move on.
Point well taken. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at tmobile.com/switch. Coming up next, part two of the expectations for Nick Caserio's draft class. We did it with the 2021 class, the 2022 class. Let's talk about the two more recent ones. We'll do that next on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style.
Ooh.
You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.